May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. For those of you who are television fans, the Emmy nominations came out this week. Does anybody follow that? Yeah, nobody followed it at 8:30. A real good idea for me to start the sermon with this, wasn't it? Well, if there's anyone out there who follows it, for the first time this century, HBO did not corral most of the nominations. That distinction was nabbed by Netflix this year. Y'all do know what HBO and Netflix are. Game of Thrones, a perennial favorite, topped the list with Westworld following closely behind. And I can see you're wondering just what the end. I mention them only because our gospel reading this morning has all the elements, characters, and plot twists we find in these most highly nominated dramas. Our reading this morning has a weak and fearful client king who nevertheless exercises full authority over his subjects. His vengeful yet insecure wife, her seductive Lolita-like daughter, and a single-minded prophet who is unafraid to preach truth to power with little interest in softening his sharp words. All of the action today takes place within a corrupt and hedonistic puppet royal court in an occupied land. Add to this mix political oppression, religious turmoil, and messianic fervor, along with generous portions of lust, greed, power, and intrigue. It's all the makings of an Emmy-nominated movie. So just how did we? Recall that in our readings for the last several weeks, Jesus has been preaching and teaching and healing in villages all around the Sea of Galilee, and in the process has developed quite a name for himself. We hear in the opening sentence today that Jesus' reputation and stories of his activities have reached the royal court and even the ears of the ruler of Galilee, Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great, who was the king at the time of the birth of Jesus. This sets the stage for that time-honored literary technique, the flashback. Jesus' public ministry in Mark began with the arrest of John the Baptist. Herod has apparently held him in prison since then, and now we finally learn his fate. Herod imprisoned the Baptist because John disapproved of Herod's marriage to his wife Herodias. You see, Herodias used to be Herod's sister-in-law, till Herod wooed her away from his brother and married her himself. Besides all this, Herodias was also the daughter of another brother, and hence their niece. Now, under Jewish law, it was legal to marry your niece, but it was not legal to marry your brother's wife while your brother was still alive. John felt this was a grave violation of the law, thereby making both Herod and Herodias adulterers. John the Baptist, he was not quiet. This did not set well with Herodias, whose resentment and anger quickly became murderous. Herod, however, served as a buffer against Herodias' vengeful and violent intent. He protected John in his prison because he recognized him as a righteous and holy man. He feared him, yet he was drawn to him. John, yet he often listened. What glimmer of hope, what current of faith did John stirred up? The situation comes to a violent conclusion on Herod's birthday. He throws a huge birthday bash banquet for himself. It was apparently a party at which anybody who was anybody in Galilee attended. In keeping with his debauched reputation, it was a wildly raucous. Herodias' daughter comes in and dances for them, setting the scene for the climactic event. While Mark also calls her Herodias, she is usually known as Salome. Salome's dance of the seven veils is the stuff of legend and fantasy, long celebrated in art, music, and stage. consider for a moment what a scandal this alone would have been. In ancient times, men and women banqueted separately in separate halls. It is why Salome must go out after her dance to confer with her mother. It would have been highly inappropriate for any women to be in attendance of the men, save servants and prostitutes. For a royal princess to dance scantily clad before a room full of drunken men would have been scandalous beyond belief. Yet Herod, filled with liquor and lust, is so enthralled with his great niece that he makes a solemn vow before his hall filled with guests to give her whatever she desires. The trap is sprung. In collusion with her mother, she asks for the head of the family. Herod is really in a bind now. He wants to protect John. He fears him, yet he seeks him out. On some levels, he feels the tug of righteousness. He has at least a glimmer of the choices he should make. But ambition and power and position hold sway. Afraid of appearing weak and needing to uphold his image and his drunken oaths before his guests, Herod concedes, and John is executed. Of course, Herod's fear and guilt are evident in the pre-flashback setting of our reading as he processes stories about Jesus, and it's certain Jesus is John the Baptist, come back to confront and torment him. The dilemma faced by Herod Antipas continues to perplex and confound us today. We think we safely know the answers to the story, but we are faced with new and evolving dilemmas of our own. It can be as difficult for us to discern the presence of righteousness, follow its path, as it was for Herod. We are too frequently confronted with examples of people who have power and control over the lives of millions of people, making decisions that have very real consequences for their people over whom they have authority, and sometimes even far beyond. Too often, it seems decisions are made like Herod, with primary regard for ambition, power, image, and position. Rulers of some nations allow their people to starve while maintaining huge militaries and developing ever larger nuclear arsenals. We have become inured to the situations of ethnic cleansing and sectarian violence around the world. Confronted with the largest human migration crisis in history, nations respond by locking people out, herding them into the squalor of resettlement. Children are torn from their parents' arms at the border with little apparent accounting, traumatizing yet another generation. Lies become truth, and all credibility is undermined to preserve power. Yes, Herod lived. But the message here is not of the victory and the power of tyrants and despots, or of our powerless and hopeless fate. Nor is the message about our inability to discern what is right and, unlike Herod, to implement it in our lives. The message is the still small voice of faith, of a faith that fans the flames of righteousness and hope in us all, that reassures us of the true source of power. Herod sensed its presence and shied away from it. As disciples, we are pulled toward it and embraced by it, that we may more fully understand the decisions we make in our lives. We are challenged to strive, not necessarily toward power, ambition, or image, but rather toward furthering the advance.